Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you if, since last week's show, have you gotten more powerful? Didn't it help? Because we're interviewing the author again of the book called My Road to Power, based on her best-selling book, The Road to Power. So we're finding out how my road became the road. And it's an incredible journey. I love talking about it. I love interviewing Barbara Berger. She's so wonderful and has lived an amazing life. Barbara, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Thank you for having me, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Well, yeah, and you know, I'm grateful because I mean, we have done a lot of shows over the years with your many books, because you are, I mean, one of the aspects of your road to power is what you say saved you is your ability to put it into writing, and and from the very beginning, your early life, when you got to Scandinavia, you wrote a book called The Journey. And it made you popular.
Famous is the word.
Good.
Yes, we ended our last show with that we had come to Sweden. That we started in, for people who just have forgotten that because of the Vietnam War, Steve and I, we left America. We went underground, and we were underground for 1.5 years until we met a very famous Swedish artist in Mexico. And he took us with him to Sweden, where Steve and I got political asylum, actually.
Right. And it's amazing the serendipity of that.
I beg your pardon?
It's amazing the serendipity and the synchronicity of that.
Yes. Yes. That we met this artist, Ragnar Johansson, on the very first day that we arrived in Mexico, when we were had been on the run for 1.5 years. We had no money. We knew we couldn't speak Spanish. We were broke. We didn't know what to do. And we were sitting on a park bench when this guy came up and started talking to us. And so when we told him our story, he said we shouldn't worry anymore. He would take care of us. And he did. And so we ended up some months later in Sweden.
But your whole life is full of incredible happenings, that things happen that
Well, that's the next thing that happened when I was in Sweden, as I mentioned last time, because I was so traumatized myself after all we had already been through, I started as a kind of self-therapy to write down what had happened to us. And I called it The Journey, because we had been on this amazing journey. And every day I sat writing on my little typewriter. We had typewriters in those days. And there was a guy who visited us, and he kept seeing me writing. And one day he said, "Barbara, what are you writing? Can I look at it?" And I said, "Sure." And so I lent him the manuscript, and he took it. And without asking me, he gave it to one of the biggest publishers in Sweden, and they wanted to publish it immediately because it was so timely. It was about the young people who were in protest against the Vietnam War, all that. So we became celebrities in Sweden all overnight.
Yeah. And you exemplified it by you and Steve being such hippies. Mm-hmm. You know, you represented the hippie generation, and they loved to hear about it, especially Americans who had something to fight against.
Yeah.
And, you know, because in Scandinavia and in Sweden, and then again in Denmark, they didn't have the same consequences that you
people who were also into the music and the lifestyle, they were not getting drafted, the young guys, to go to Vietnam. So they didn't have to protest against the Vietnam War as we did. Plus, I had just come from America, where there was also the civil rights movement in those days, where there was a lot really going. So there were these two things that you could say the young people in America, we were more socially conscious than the young people in Europe.
That's why you were important, yes.
And in Europe, it was much more, the drug scene was much more about going to the East, getting liberated, higher consciousness, which also was very important to me. So coming to Scandinavia, I didn't stay in Sweden so long. I ended up moving to Denmark, but that's another story. But in Denmark, when I first came to Denmark, my book had been translated also to Danish. And so when I arrived in Copenhagen, I was also, suddenly my book had come out here, and there had just been the Bertram Russell War Crimes Tribunal had been held in Copenhagen. They were the intellectuals of the Western world were protesting and trying to come with evidence why this war should stop and so on. And that was simultaneously with my book, The Journey, came out in Danish. So I got even more publicity when I came to Denmark. And then they found out that I had a father who worked in the Pentagon and who was.
You already knew that, but you found out how powerful he was.
Yeah, that's true. I knew it. Denmark.
Your line just broke up for a second. Can you repeat that?
Okay. I was saying that you and I, we knew this about my father, but when I came to Denmark, the newspapers got a hold of this story, the tabloids in Denmark, that my father was a top military man at the Pentagon. So they combined that with the story that this book had just come out about the youth movement in the States and coming to Europe. So all the newspapers now, they were having big stories about me. And the headlines were always like, you know, American girl speaks out against Lyndon Johnson. Her father works in the Pentagon. I mean, they just blew. Tabloids have a way of doing that.
How did your father like that?
Well, my father never knew. He wasn't here. And so my parents didn't find out about any of that.
Well, that's good, because I'm sure it would have been hard for him to go to work every day if he knew
about it. It didn't really affect my relationship with my father, because I didn't have any relationship with my parents.
Well, he came to your rescue a number of times.
A few times, yes. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it's really important. Because you took risks, and let's get into that. What is it about you? You know, and you write about it in your book, and I love reading about it. It's a journey for truth, for enlightenment, for consciousness, that you felt you were blessed enough to take every risk possible. And you did, and we're going to talk about those risks.
I think it was from an early age, as we talked about on our last show, that I had access to higher consciousness, to experiencing divine bliss consciousness, Om Satyananda, at a very early age. This liberation, this light field that we can enter at times if our consciousness is higher enough. And once we've experienced that, it's so powerful that everything else in your life, it's like you continue trying to get back to that state. How come I lost it? Where is it? So this knowingness that it was there and it was waiting for me to return home, you could say. We're talking about the death of the ego. We're talking about giving up the illusion of this life. So there were many things involved in that. And taking drugs was also a portal, you could say, to accessing that state.
Right. And I did that as well. but nowadays, you've become this very well-known author. And so what this is about is understanding this journey that, because it's all right. So let's say you already had some enlightenment early on, but what you were seeking was the wisdom to find it again. And the wisdom to find it again you underwent great trials. And so to me, that's so important, is that you've been willing to take incredible risks in your life. And going east, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves, because you actually went on an amazing journey to find this wisdom by going to India. But you never quite got there. And for, because we can't predict life. All we can do is take the next step. And you kept on taking amazing steps. So I want to come back to that. You were married to Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And then you found much more happiness in Copenhagen than you had in Sweden. And
mm-hmm.
wanted to move to Copenhagen, but you were told that you would be deported if you weren't married to a Dane. And here you're married to an American. So what happened?
So that was a really very stressful. They said I had 14 days to get married to a Dane or they would deport me. And since I was already married to Steve, who was in Sweden, we weren't together anymore. And I said to Steve, we've got to get divorced really fast. And so the only way we could get divorced was that if the law said in Sweden that we had to go to court in the town where we last lived together, which was in Uppsala, Sweden, which was north of Stockholm. And I was in Denmark. It was kind of far away. And then the only way we could get a fast divorce at that time was if he could prove that I had actually slept with another man in infidelity. And so two of the guy I was with, two and I and Steve, the three of us had to go to Uppsala and go to court.
Right, you were then two, when you say two, T-U-E.
T-U-E, Tue. It was the Danish guy I was with.
Right.
Yeah.
So he went with you.
So we went to the courthouse.
He had slept with you. And you got divorced, yes, and could come back, yes, and married too, because you needed to be married to him.
But then the thing was that in order to get married in Denmark, you had to go to the mayor of the place that you were living. And we were living out in the country by a big castle. And the person who was the mayor of that town, he owned the local grocery store. And so we had to go to the local grocery store to get married. And so we came, not only did we come on the wrong day, but when we actually came, he was standing in his white uniform, at the cash register dealing with customers who were buying food. And then we said, hello, you're supposed to marry us. And then he said, oh yeah, just a minute. And then he went out in the back and he came back and he had put on a top hat and
nice,
a vest. Uh-huh. On top of his grocer uniform. And then he looked at some of the people in the shop and he said, I need two witnesses. Is there anybody here who would be a witness to this? I'm going to marry these young people. And so two people came and then he said all these things in Danish. It took like 2 minutes and then I was married to a Dane. So,
well, not only that, you were married on October 17th, which is mm-hmm. a Five of Clubs day. And a five
okay.
of clubs are the mind, and five means I need more. I don't have enough. So the two of you were always seeking more. And makes sense, because you could have been born married on any other day that would have had a different purpose.
Okay.
So anyway, you and two were now a married couple living in this
Budsborg.
Yeah, in a town.
Yes, it was the queen has her summer castle there. Denmark has a queen.
Right.
And so she has her big castle in Copenhagen and then in Fredensborg, which is this gorgeous nature area with a big lake and a big park. The queen has a little castle there where she stays in the summer. And so we were living in a collective not far from there, which was my first introduction to living in Denmark. It was gorgeous. Gorgeous place, gorgeous nature.
So then why didn't you just stay there and have family and just live in the country? And isn't that nice?
No. We were on a mission. The other thing that happened there too that was really interesting, because my book had come out and I had gotten so famous, one of the biggest magazines in Denmark, they asked me to write a weekly column about the youth revolution and the young generation. So I had a job immediately upon coming to Denmark where I wrote, and they published it in English, which was also very unusual. But because I was this star and the representative of sort of the young people, so I had a weekly column where all I had to do was tell about what we were up to, why we were the way we were, why we took drugs, why we were seeking enlightenment, all of this stuff. So I wrote about that every week. And that was also a really big success. And then another magazine, an even bigger one, asked me, they wanted to hire me as a regular journalist and columnist for their magazine. And I said no, because Tua and I wanted to go to the East. We were seeking higher consciousness and enlightenment. And that's what you did in those days. So we decided to go to India.
Right.
So.
And now I got confused in your book, because all of a sudden you were traveling with a guy named Tim. And you went to Istanbul with Tim. And
yeah, but okay. You know, so that was an excerpt from my next book, which is called Eat Brown Rice and Make Revolution. I had a big section of it was about going to the East. And this story that you read, that was, I didn't use our names. I used the fake names because it was supposed to be a story about how it was for young people to go to the East. So you have read it, but.
Oh, yeah, I got confused because you didn't say, oh, this is a fake name. So Tu and Tim are the same guy.
No, it was another guy, but okay.
All right. Oh, yeah, was that, I don't know, there are other guys in your life.
There are other guys.
There's a Thano, you know, you, but this, all, yeah, you were with a guy who captured your imagination and excited
you. There were quite a few of them that captured one's imagination.
Yeah, good. Good. And, you know, and I know that those relationships didn't really work out, except for temporary. And this one guy who was like a dream come true ended up becoming a very sad addict. And when you saw him again later, he was not the person you had originally known. But anyway, you took off for India the hard way because you left in the middle of winter.
I know, we were really crazy.
You know, that doesn't make sense. And not only that, you didn't just get on a plane and fly to India, you decided to trek. And you were going to walk and hike and take buses and trains and
accidents. And hitchhike.
and hitchhike, right. And you had very bad accidents and ended up in big trouble.
And the thing about that trip was, I mean, it was so grueling to go overland to as far as we got to Afghanistan. And we had, I mean, all kinds of obstacles along the way. We had the car accident you read, but then we were, when we came to Tehran, we were in this explosion, this shop. It was like people would think it was a terrorist bomb. It was like that. We were just in this shop down by the main train station in Tehran, getting some food in the middle of the day when the shop blew up. Two and I were there, and everything exploded, and the windows exploded, and everything was destroyed, and we were thrown very violently away from this explosion. And then when I woke up and realized, okay, I'm still alive, and I looked at Two, he was laying on the ground next to me, but he was covered in what I thought was blood. And so I sort of crawled over to him, and everybody from the street was screaming. But it was all in they speak Farsi in Iran. And I was screaming for help and ambulance. And then I crawled over to Tua, and he and I said, "Are you alive? Are you okay?" And then he said, "I can't see." I've gone blind. I can't see. And he had all this red, which I thought was blood, on his face. And I didn't know what to do. And people were screaming, everyone. Then finally, an ambulance did come. And they took us to the main hospital. And we came in into the emergency ward. And two still couldn't see anything. And they finally had a doctor who could speak English. And then we went in, and the doctor cleaned him up and found out there wasn't anything else wrong with him. And then they had to sort of like examine his eyes. And they did it really carefully. It took quite a while. And then they said, well, they can't, there was no damage that they could see to his eyes. His eyes were not, there were no cuts. There were no, it seemed perfectly okay. And then, like, why can't he see? And then the doctor said, his only guess was that the shock of the explosion had been so powerful that somehow or other it had shocked his sight, and that we should just sit and wait, that he was pretty sure his sight would come back. So there was nothing we could do except sit and wait.
And it came back.
And it did come back.
But I want to come back to a previous accident that you had, where you were in a vehicle that in icy conditions, it slid off the road and turned over in a ditch, and you were trapped under a vehicle and couldn't get out. And two actually had developed superhuman power to lift it off.
Yeah, just for a moment, enough so that I sort of could slide out. It was amazing. It was a miracle. He wasn't a strong guy.
Right. And it represents, you know, the magic of life when we least expect it, but we have full intention. So this is really talking about power. You know, you have, two books about personal power. And where do you find it? You know, you find it through challenge. And so much of your book is about taking on challenge. And this trip to ended up being only Afghanistan, but it was in the roughest conditions possible, the harshest time of year. You guys had almost nothing with you. You were basically broke and didn't know what to do next, because you were in this very forlorn environment, part of the world. And you were both in very bad shape. And what's next?
But we kept on going until after Iran, where two survived that. There was a pandemic going on at that time in the world called the Hong Kong flu. It was sort of like COVID. It was a very dangerous flu that lots of people got. So two, after this hospital trip and the explosion, he had this Hong Kong flu. So we had to stay in a hotel for a couple of days. That was the end of our money right there, so he could recover. But then we had to go on. If we were going to get to India before we were totally out of funds, we had to move on. So we decided to go. You had to go to Afghanistan, and then you would go through the Khyber Pass to Pakistan, and then you would end up in India. That was the route in those days.
And so, rather than taking a plane.
So when we came to the border between Iran and Afghanistan, the beautiful city of Mashhad, there were some other hippies there that we met. And so we hired a bus to take us across the border, which was no man's land, which was like about 100 kilometers between, where there's absolutely nothing. It's like a frozen desert in the winter. And so we were in this bus with all these people, and the bus broke down in the middle of nowhere in the freezing cold. It was like minus 20, minus 30, and we didn't have any clothes, and we didn't have winter gear. And so they couldn't fix, nobody could fix the bus, so we had to walk. So we had to walk through no man's land to get to Afghanistan. And by the time we got there, I was really ill and was burning up with fever and was hallucinating, and I was scared to death. And it was like, Oh my God, what am I doing here? That's probably one of the most scary times in my life.
And before the show is over, which will be in a couple minutes, I really want to solve this problem so we can move on to the next time we talk, which will be when you're actually back trying to live a more positive life. And not that this wasn't trying to do that, but it kept getting in your way. And so you went into, let's just, you know, we can quickly say you went into the US consulate there, and they didn't want anything to do with you because you were a hippie, even though you were an American. They kicked you out, and then you were able to get in touch with your father at the Pentagon. And all of a sudden, and he said, wait 24 hours. And all of a sudden, you knocked on the consulate door again, and they let you right in, and they brought you into an American hospital there and fixed you up.
They said, we don't know who your father is, but we got a top priority telegram from the State Department saying that we should take care of you. So suddenly I was saved.
Yeah, I love that. You know, but again, it keeps coming back to the magic of life. And you develop wisdom by challenging yourself. And this is so big about you, to challenge life. And you know, so big deal. It's winter. Let's trek across foreign lands. And, you know, but that's how your soul needed you to develop the wisdom to show you that life shows up powerfully when you least expect it.
But again, my motivation has always been we can do it better. What is it that's preventing us human beings from doing it better, from being higher in consciousness, from being more loving, to being more inclusive, to sharing our wealth with the, I mean, I had to see the world to understand better
Yeah, and this is, yeah, go ahead. I know we're
craziness
just
of
at the end of the
humanity.
show, and so but this is why I want to talk to you in a subsequent show to understand what you're saying about this purpose of finding answers in life, that why, you know, what really matters. And so your book, My Road to Power, is a discovery of what really matters. And on and on and on, because it's not just one thing. It's many things, and you've written many books about it. So Barbara Berger, the author of My Road to Power, Sex, Trauma, and Higher Consciousness. I love talking with you. This is fascinating. And please come back subsequently.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure as usual.
Good, thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.live. I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HeartRiver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.